with Lindsay McDougall on ABC Illawarra.
Jimmy Barnes has seen it all. He's done it all. He has been there during it all. The darkness, the light, the ridiculous highs and those terrible and oft-spoken and written about lows. In fact, he's written two books all about most of that. But there was bits left over. So after Working Class Boy and Working Class Man, the Southern Highlands local has released Killing Time, 40 stories that didn't quite fit into the two books, including a bunch of stories from around these areas. Hyams Beach, Nowra, the Southern Highlands themselves, of course, and one of them even involves a horse. He even re-recorded one of Cold Chisel's songs from their last record specifically for the book, and I was very happy to have a chat to Mr. Jimmy Barnes. It's killing time. Of course, if you're going to re-record a Cold Chisel song for the release of a book, you get the Australian Chamber Orchestra to help you out. Jimmy Barnes and Killing Time there, and Jimmy's on the line. Hello, sir.
G'day, mate. How are you?
I'm very well.
It's a pretty epic bloody arrangement. Richard Tognetti is really unbelievable.
those riffs, which I'm guessing with Cold Chisel played on, you know, the guitar and the keyboards and everything, but played with the orchestra, really, as I was saying off air, it sounds a little bit like Queen, like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, it's or James Bond theme or something. It's pretty epic sounding. You know, I mean, it was just a beautiful thing to get the opportunity. I worked with a chamber orchestra when I did The Working Class Boy, and Richard Tognetti and I have struck up a friendship, and we're slowly going to work through a bunch of songs and make an album together. So this is number two track. I think the next track we're going to do, it's funny you should mention it, is Saturday Night by Cold Chisel. Maybe we'll get Mossy in. We'll see.
With a full...
Mossy and the Richard Tognetti.
And like a full brass section for the saxophone part.
There you go. The whole horn section from the orchestra for timpanis.
Wow. Timpanis for Saturday night. Doom, doom, doom. Anyway, let's... Look, there's so many...
So how are you anyway?
I'm very well. I spent the last couple of weeks just lying at the beach reading Killing Time and getting through these stories.
Oh, good on you. Well done.
Which has been nice.
There you go.
Well, there's lovely stories from beaches and things all over the world. There's your trips to Thailand with Jane and Jane's family.
Yeah.
There's that Golden Buddha story. Look, I thought since we're here in ABC Illawarra, we'd stay a little bit close to home with some of the questions.
Yeah.
Some of the stories. And this is how I asked a question. When Jimmy Barnes used to go to pubs in Bowra, occasionally he'd bring Big Jim with him. Now, a couple of the suggestions were Big Jim as a security guard to keep the punters from screaming, play K-San in Jimmy's ear. Another one said it was Jim Magini, that's Steve from Tallawarra, from Midnight Oil. But tell me who Big Jim is, Jimmy?
They're all pretty feasible. It could have been Jim Magini. No, but it wasn't. Big Jim, when I moved to Mittagong, to the gym, Mount Gibraltar, 1980 or something like that. My brother John, you know, it's the first time I'd lived in the country. My brother John decided that I should have a horse. Everybody who lives on a farm should have a horse. Now, this is all well and good, except that I couldn't ride a horse. John brought me this 16-hand ex-race horse, you know, chestnut coat, you know, fire in its eyes. And he said, the horse's name is Big Jim. So I didn't name the horse, right? But he said, I bought him because he belongs with you with a name like that. So Big Jim and I became close friends suddenly because I took him out to Fitzroy Falls and the first day I was going to ride him, I thought I'd better get a lesson because I hadn't ridden much. And I took him out there and it was bucketing with rain as it tends to do in the Highlands a bit. And I got on in a lunging yard and Big Jim bolted and stopped dead at the fence and threw me across into a mud. I fell off, of course, and I got up and wiped the mud off my face and I went up and had a stern talking to him. And from that moment on, Jim and I became best friends. You know, I rode him every single day I was in the Highlands for about 10 years. And, you know, we'd ride around the town. I used to ride, I lived on the mountain between Mittagong and Bowral. And I used to ride down to town and tie him up on outside the pub, the local pub. And people just thought I was nuts. I just always wanted to do that, you know, like you see in the Westerns. So I'd tie him up outside the pub. And I'd go in, and, you know, the publican was pretty funny. And he's telling me, you know, by rights, apparently you have the right to do that. And if you stay there the night, they have to stable your horse.
Did you ever...
that wasn't necessary.
Oh, okay. You know, I was a bunch...
I just have a... I'd have a beer and then I'd gallop back up the hill. See?
I was at Bundanoon train station on Saturday, and there's a big sign there saying you're not allowed to tie your horses up to the posts there. So maybe you'd probably.
I think when we did the second prize film clip, which was me and Big Jim galloping around the Highlands, I think we actually galloped through or past Bundanoon railway station. That's probably why.
Yes, you can see Big Jim in the No Second Prize video clip. All right, to look at the second question with you, Jimmy Barnes. Now, Jerry thinks what you lost, what the Jimmy Barnes and family lost at Hyams Beach was probably your mind due to the traffic around Hyams Beach. But tell me, Jimmy, why were you scouring the pure white sands of Hyams Beach with a metal detector?
Well, I've got to tell you, I'd lost my mind long before then. You know, no, listen, you know, anybody who's swam in Hyams Beach, it's beautiful, you know, the beautiful white sand, but it's bloody freezing. The water was freezing cold, and we went in for a swim, Jane and I, and came out, and Jane was sort of pointing at, you know, things in the horizon and stuff. Mm. And of course, you know, when it's really cold, your hands shrink, and her wedding ring flew off, and I could see it fly through the air and boom, land in the sand, and I lost it. Couldn't see it. And I literally, we hunted for an hour. The kids wanted to help. I just had to keep off the sand so I could find it. Mm. And they're all playing up the beach. And I had a grid laid out in the sand, and I was searching, couldn't find it. And eventually had to drive to Nara and get a metal detector, which I was surprised you could hire quite easily. You know, so I wasn't obviously the only person who'd done it. And then I searched for a couple more hours, and the sun was starting to go down. I couldn't find it, and I was just going. And in the meantime, my daughter, EJ, who was probably 10 at the time, was going, Dad, let me have a go. And I've got, no, this is very serious business, baby. I've got to find the ring. And finally, I sort of lay on the sand. I was exhausted, boiling hot, sweating. And I put the metal detector down, and EJ picked it up, and she found it within 20 seconds. So I found the ring, gave it back to Jane, you know, and then drove back to Nara and gave back the metal detector.
But
I must have looked like Richard Nixon for a while, you know?
You would have looked... Look, the stories that you have about your family, about the love of your life, Jane, and all that are wonderful. How is Jane about that photo of you and her? It was on your wedding anniversary in the Highlands after you upturned the canoe.
Oh, man. it's on the Windjacarabee River.
Yeah.
We live on the river. And it was fine, except our anniversary was midwinter. It's in May 22nd. So it was really, really cold. And the sun was starting to go down. I talked Jane in there. I said, come on, I'll take you for a canoe. And she's going, I don't think that's necessary. And I said, no, it'll be really nice. You'll love it. It'll be romantic. You know, the sun's going down. So anyway, I talked her into it, and she got rugged up in a jacket and all this sort of stuff. And I put the canoe in the water, and I got her in, and I was paddling up the river and singing in Italian, pretending to be a gondolier in Venice, you know. I'm singing, oh, sorry, I'm here, you know, like this. And she's going, you know, it was really cold. It was freezing, 5 degrees or something. And we got up about 300 yards up the river, and she said, I think we should go back now. And I said, okay, baby, whatever you say. And I was turning the canoe around, and I don't know why. I am the clumsiest man in the world. I've got to tell you that. And I don't know what I did, but the canoe just slipped, and both of us were in the water. I quickly jumped up and grabbed my pocket and pulled, and my phone was in my pocket, but it was still dry. I was that quick. I was out. And we were up to standing in chest-deep water, and it was absolutely freezing. And Jane was crying. And I reasoned, but I was laughing. You see, I was like, which made things worse. It made it much worse. And then, so I said, Jane, you've got to help me tip the canoe over, otherwise I'm going to die here. So I got it back, and I got it back in the canoe, and I jumped in. And that 300-yard paddle back was the longest 300 yards of my life. It was cold, 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 and it wasn't just about the weather. It was cold in the canoe. And we got to the other end. And Jane immediately jumped out onto the bank and walked straight to the house. And I slowly got the canoe out of the water by myself. And then I went up to the house, and Jane didn't talk to me for the rest of our anniversary. And in fact, it was so bad. It was that traumatic for her. She didn't go in the canoe with me again until, you know, a couple of years ago.
Look, she's put up with a lot. But just last night, you playing bagpipes right next to her. We've been loving here at the ABC Illawarra, watching the amazing Jane Barnes Band performing almost every night.
She's awesome. She's awesome.
She's been learning guitar. You've both been learning bagpipes, I believe.
I've been wanting to play bagpipes for years, and I started just doing a couple of lessons, you know, a couple of years ago. But coming into COVID, the lockdown, Jane decided she was really going to work on her guitar. Mm. So I said to her, okay, I'll work on my bagpipes. And if you listen at the very start of the recordings, Jane's guitar playing sounds like a little campfire-ish, you know. She struggles and she's, you know, scrambling through the chords. And if you look at from the growth from then to now, she's quite accomplished. She's really quite good. And now, at the very start, I started playing bagpipes, and it sounded like I was me strangling a cat. And if you look at the growth from then to now, I sound like I'm strangling two cats.
You've added a cat to your arsenal.
I've added a cat. But yeah, it's the same, only louder.
Jimmy Barnes's new book is called Killing Time. There's so many stories in it, including you played a charity gig. I was asking everyone. Jack Thompson was there. Brian Brown was there. Michael Carlton was there. What song you performed? Yes, yes. And it was Joe Cocker's You Can Leave Your Hat On. Now, I think we're going to run out of time for the full length of this story. But
yeah, I'll tell you what it was I wasn't singing the song. I had to dance to it. I had to do the full Monty for a charity. And I said yes before I realized what was going on, and I couldn't get out of it. It was the most embarrassing time of my life. And once again, it was a very cold night.
And no photos exist of you. You managed to hide in the background, apparently.
I just kept ducking and weaving. There was cameras everywhere, and you know, there's no shots, so it's very good.
There's some amazing stories of your time actually recording, including singing the version of Just Like Jesse James as a demo before Cher made it a hit, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Desmond Child, who wrote it, is a dear friend of mine, and he was writing for everybody, Aerosmith, Bon Jovi, all these people at the time. And it was just before he produced the first Cher record, I think, and he wanted me to sing some demos for him. And myself... We sang this song, sang this song for him, and I forgot about it until years later when Cher released it, and I'm going, hang on, I remember singing that. That sounds like my bits. So she must have copied my bits. Either that or I copied Desmond's bits. I'm not sure.
Well, nonetheless, look, I'm going to play one more song, though, because in this amazing stories of, you know, rock and roll excess and all that kind of thing, this one, though, this is just quite beautiful. And this is actually the version from your Working Class Boy soundtrack, recorded at the State Theatre up in Sydney. But tell me who you sung this for. No band, no one else, just a crowd of people, a couple of angry bouncers looking on when you were singing this song a cappella.
I had to sing this. I went to a party at Deepak Chopra's house. Deepak's a friend of mine, and I went in, and the party was full of celebrities and you know, Donna Karan, and there was bloody, you know, billionaires and philanthropists and all that, and I sat down and I was next to this little old black American lady, and Deepak introduced me. It was Rosa Parks, who was like the mother of the civil rights movement. Yeah. Rosa was the woman who wouldn't get up off her seat and sort of sparked a big change of events.
The Montgomery bus boycott. But 65 years ago,
exactly,
this December. Like, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, and so she was an amazing woman, and she told her story, and it was very moving, and I was sitting there, and then when she finished it, Deepak said, and now Jimmy would like to sing for you, and I was like, oh, and there was no band, no piano, no nothing there, and I had to sing a cappella, so I sang In the Upper Room, which was a gospel song for Rosa, and it was one of the most moving times, but also I was frightened. You know, a couple of reasons. Big one, because I was singing for Rosa, and two, because her two bouncers, who looked like they were from the Louis Farrakhan Muslim movement, you know, with the glasses and the sharp suits, I had insulted earlier at the hotel. I didn't know Rosa was going to be there, and they were banging on my door, and I basically told them where to go, and suddenly I recognized them, and they recognized me when I was singing.
very. I love how this is kind of the stories that didn't fit in the first two, but it is just such a perfectly encapsulated of your life sort of book. Is it?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of great things happen, but there's some very funny things. Yeah. And in fact, so lots of these were big signposts, which, you know, in the life when life starts trying to teach you lessons and you should go, oh, I see that and I'll learn the lesson. I missed a lot of them, but I remember them when I was writing the book.
They're in here. And look, tonight, Mahalia's playing in Bowral at the bowling club. We chatted to her about a month ago when she first started doing these residencies. What have you got planned for the next little while?
Besides probably going down to sing with her tonight, I'm home. But I'm writing. I'm writing some songs. I'm in the process of I'm writing a solo record, but I'm also making a rockabilly record at the moment with Chris. We're doing it all remotely because we're all locked down.
With Chris Cheney from The Living End.
Melbourne.
Yeah.
Chris, and also with Slim Jim Phantom from the Stray Cats, who's in Los Angeles. So we're sort of sending tapes around to each other. and adding bits and pieces as we go. So we hope to hopefully going to have a rockabilly record by sort of mid next year as well as a solo record. And we're working on an ongoing project with the Australian Chamber Orchestra, which I've got to tell you, I've sang with some phenomenal bands in my time, but Richard Tognetti and the Australian Chamber Orchestra have to be one of the best, you know, string quartets. Well, it was bigger than a quartet. It was 18-piece. The string sections that I've ever heard in my life.
Jimmy, we're going to run out of time, so I've got to let you go, but thank you so much for chatting to us. Jimmy Barnes, Killing Time, short stories from the long road home and some long stories there. Good to talk to you, mate.
You too, Lindsay. All the best, mate.
This is Lindsay McDougall on ABC Illawarra.